Welcome to a late summer episode of The Court Report. I'm Jerry Price. I'm here with Princeton women's basketball coach Courtney Manghart. Coach, welcome.
Glad to be back.
So it's, as we are recording this, it's Tuesday, August 21st, which is, I believe, your dad's birthday.
It is. Yeah, the old man's getting older.
And my brother's birthday as well.
Good man, is he?
He's a good man, sure.
Good.
He, when we used to go to summer camp in the Catskills, we went to sleepaway camp when we were little for 8 weeks, and his birthday always rolled around about the time where the camp was ending. So I always associated it with that. But now it's always the week, like as teams are getting ready to play and the fall teams are practicing, getting ready to start another season. So that's where we are here at Princeton with unbelievably the 2018-19 athletic year kicking off this week with women's soccer already. It's amazing that the summer has gone so fast.
Sure has.
So summer for you is not downtime. There's been a lot of stuff that's happened with the women's basketball team. We'll get into some of that, but it's not the same. I mean, you have gotten away a little bit, mm-hmm. and you have had a chance to do some things other than related to Princeton women's basketball. Just talk a little bit about how you spent your summer.
You know, June is a busy time for us with our institutional camps that really help in the recruiting landscape and helps us share this place with some of our great fans and the younger generations, et cetera. And then July is a really heavy recruiting month for our program. It's a pretty restricted calendar in women's basketball. So we were, you know, new staff without really being seen and evaluating talent. And then you get into August where you get a little bit of time to be with family. I've got a family sort of compound almost up in southern New Hampshire where all my siblings and we all kind of converge, all my cousins, for a week, which is special. And then I actually did this really cool thing. I was speaking at this event at the Princeton
alumni.
Yeah, the Princeton Club of Nantucket. And the group of people that were there, obviously they're some of the most successful people who have worn the orange and black, but they're also some of the most generous and welcoming people. And I just had a really wonderful experience, and I thank them so much for the warm welcome.
Did you take the ferry or did you fly?
I did. I took the ferry. You know, it's a harder place to get to than I thought.
It's like 2 hours, right?
We took the, thanks to Princeton, they put me on the fast one. Mm-hmm. So I was in out pretty quick. But, you know, I get there and Bill Powers, obviously the football field named after Bill Powers, he kind of picked me up and, I had my little kids with me and we brought them to the beach club and his beach club and let them swim and take care of that business. And then I put them on the ferry. And then I stayed, you know, Bill and I had a glass of wine together on the beach, and then he drove me over to the event. I mean, it's just really nice people that wanted to show me a great time, and they did, and it was fun to bring Princeton to them.
What's your dad's take on working at Princeton and all the success you've had here, but also all the, you know, the way that you...
It's a neat question.
Go to events like that. And...
Yeah, my dad's dad went to Harvard and was a physicist. And then my dad went to RPI and was an electrical engineer. So the whole idea of this kind of collegiate athletics thing has been a newer thing for my family in terms of professional. But my brother's a very successful banker. My sister's a Montessori school teacher. And my dad's just been a really loyal and patient guy in terms of his commitment to everyone has their own journey. And for him, he likes that I'm doing a journey that I really enjoy and that I seem to be pretty good at. And he's a front row supporter, but he doesn't get too caught up in the wins losses. He gets pretty caught up in the fact that I'm doing something that that matters to me and matters to other people.
What was he like at your games? Dartmouth games, so like little kid games.
He says it's always easier to be a parent when your kid is good. Because anything you say gets you,
well, of course it is.
Gets you in trouble. Yeah, and so fortunately I had been pretty good at the sports I played, so he just stayed out of it. I mean, he always came to mostly every game. He was far enough ahead in his company where he could do that, but he was not at all. He's a pretty quiet guy, as you probably know anyway, and he doesn't really know a ton about basketball or play tennis competitively and soccer competitively, and he just was, he just liked watching his kids play, and we all were pretty good at it, so he didn't have to say much.
So the... trip to Nantucket is part of the outreach that the coach has to do to engage the entire community and all that stuff. It's almost political in nature. Do you like that?
I love it, Jerry. So I think it's actually more university-driven. It's kind of through the alumni department.
It's sort of like what a politician does.
Yes, yeah. No, you do. You get to share Princeton with people. You get to bring it to their home. It's like a home visit that we do in our world. But for me, it also connects me to people. Princeton's welcomed me so tremendously from the minute I walked in this gate. I actually said on my talk, I do feel more welcome at Princeton almost than I do at Dartmouth. And so when I go to these events, I see that. Like, people are so grateful that I'm there, and they're so welcoming.
Princeton and Dartmouth 1-2 in alumni giving, not total dollars, but percentage of alumni who give?
It's a good question. I have no idea.
I think they are. So
really?
I have no idea. You know, you chose two pretty loyal places.
Yes, very much so. They're both community-based, for sure.
And the the politics side of it, is that something you think you'd ever want to get into down the road?
You know, if I could make enough of a difference,
I've always said that about John Thompson. Like, you know, yeah, I think he'd be good at that.
You know? As long as you can have a front line, I think the neat thing about coaching is I get to have a front line access every day as well. So I don't know enough about the political world in terms of is the policy process, you're so far removed from the front line. But I've always said there's going to be something else for me after coaching, and I just don't know what it is yet.
So let's talk the Princeton women's basketball piece.
Yeah.
And the number one thing that really leaps out is the schedule, which got released. And it's, you know, it's good. It's great. I mean, I think that, you know, a lot, the numbers escape me, but it's pretty much every non-conference team is somebody played in the postseason last year.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an accident. I mean, you can go out and schedule whoever you want. So talk a little bit about, you know, how do you come to build a schedule even, like,
yeah,
how many years out do you have to start talking to teams?
Yep. And about 2 years out, and you try to predict in terms of where their roster is. You want them to be good. I think other people might do the opposite. They might predict when their best players are graduating and try to catch them on an off year. We're doing the opposite. We want over half of our non-conference opponents, hopefully two-thirds, to be NCAA tournament caliber teams. So you have to sort of project based on rostering.
Because of the experience of playing them or how it prepares you for the league season?
Both.
Or is it
recruiting, too, all three.
Or is it also to try to build an RPI high enough that you can get an at-large bid?
All of it. I also like to look at my players and say, you know, I like when they I think all of them would say I'm two things, fearless and competitive. And I think part of that is the way we schedule. So we're playing in Cancun. We're going to play DePaul, Kansas State, and Syracuse, three teams Princeton's never beaten. And don't think I'm going down there to, like, get sun in Cancun. There'll be no sun on game days, right? It's all, for me, it's all about, like, them being in that locker room and saying, hey, it's never been done before. Why not us? So, yeah, we schedule super challenging, and that will affect the win-loss record of my career, but it will so far outweigh the experience my players get that's all I really care about.
And I think that's a big thing, because I think that there's just a different feel to a game and a game night when you're playing you know, an NCAA tournament team from the year before than a, you know, 250 or below RPI team from the year before.
No doubt.
And I think that's something that's really, that really appeals to the athletes, but also the fans. I mean, it sort of brings people to the program and they want to be part of that and watch those games.
I certainly hope so. I mean, I can't tell you how hard we work to get really good teams here in Jadwin. So the following year, we'll get Penn State on a return. We'll get Missouri here. We'll get, you know, so we have to work really hard to do that. We try to play in the hometowns of where our kids are currently from or sort of our recruiting hotbeds within reason. It's very hard to ask people outside of our region to play us. It's hard to get anyone inside our region to play us because we're so good annually.
I mean, men have dealt with that for years.
Yeah, scheduling is way harder than people think. I think there are plenty of alums and fans of the program that are like, hey, why aren't the men playing Villanova? Well, they would love to. You know, there's a lot of reasons why these things don't happen. Sort of like, why don't we play Rutgers every year? I'd sign a 10-year contract right now to play them. It doesn't happen, you know. So it's a challenge, but I'm really proud of the schedule we've accumulated, and I ask the fans to stick with us as we have six newcomers. And I'm not sure we'll be 500 going into the conference play, but I assume we'll be pretty good by the time we need to be.
So when you go to build your schedule, where do you start? I mean, do you just have like a calendar in front of you and you say, all right, I want to try to play this team, and like, I mean, how's
there are certain teams we want to play all the time. George Washington is always going to be amongst the top of the A-10, and they're in D.C., which is where so much of our heavy recruiting lies right now. So we're going to try to play them annually. Seton Hall is a local team that's always going to be good in the Big East, in the top four, and their local trips. That's easy for class schedule missing. So you won't have to miss class to play them. So there's certain teams you start with, and then also you have some returns. So we went up and played Duquesne and Pitt a few years ago because you could play two games with one road trip, and they both will return them. And then, of course, you go – so we got to get Carlito to Iowa. So when we go there, we're playing Iowa and Iowa State. You know, that's, I think, 2 years from now. Now we got to bring Taylor Bauer home. We're going to play Missouri and St. Louis. Those are all tournament teams, and we can play anybody in those areas. But we sort of start as who's the best in the areas that we're recruiting or bringing our kids home.
I was with the men's team at Iowa State for two different holiday tournaments in the 1990s, and the first one, it was so cold. Like,
oh, it's brutal.
Tried to walk from the gym to the parking lot, and you froze. But the second one was – it was record-setting warm temperatures for December in Iowa, like
gross.
Literally temperatures in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
which
give
melted,
me hope.
Which
Come on.
Melted all of the ice.
Yeah.
And created the most unbelievable fog I've ever seen in my life.
Oh,
like
wow.
The absolute densest fog I've ever seen was in Iowa of all places.
Yeah, I mean, I went to recruit that point guard everybody loves, me included, Carly Littlefield, and her dad had sent me these texts that said, hey, you should check out this place for lunch and then walk a couple blocks away. And I got off that plane and the temperature gauge was zero and it was colder than zero. And I was like, good thing I love this kid. I better get her for this effort.
But I liked Iowa. It was pretty nice.
I was too cold to notice it.
So then as you're putting together who you're playing, where you're mm-hmm. playing, all these kinds of things, trying to balance home and away and getting kids back to where they are, your eye also has to be on when the league season starts. Mm-hmm. As you get closer to the games in late December and depending on how the calendar works into January, are you trying to schedule certain teams that present certain challenges that close to the league, or that's just coincidence when you get there, who can play you when?
Problem with late January is every other conference is in league play. So there's so few conferences that have, you have to hope they have an open date based on a bye week. Late December is a very tough time to schedule. And then in January, because of our exams, we're not doing that.
Okay, so that's the schedule, which is very challenging. Mm-hmm. It's up on the webpage if people want to see the entire thing. Just shift over a little bit to how much contact you have with players during the summer and what you're doing with them. Obviously, they're scattered literally all over the world.
Yeah, very cool.
But how much are you talking to them? How much? And again, how much do you want them to? You want them to be in shape, but how much of basketball do you want them to be playing in the summer? Do they need downtime? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on all that?
You know, I think the communication piece—it's a different generation. These people communicate through pictures and through texts and through
social media. That's how
they're
all over the world.
Exactly.
Because they post it and you retweet it.
And I read it, So you know, in terms of picking up the phone and having a conversation or FaceTiming or whatnot, I mean, that's just so rare because that's not how this generation is communicating, and they're all over the world, as you said. But you know, there's a way if you're a relationship-based person. And there's a way to touch a player and touch a person that they know you care. And, you know, I'm constantly just, they're on my mind. And so if something comes up that reminds me of Taylor Bauer, I'm going to reach out to her or whatnot. So that makes it a little different. I was recruiting in D.C. and got to have dinner with Bella and her family. She's actually grown an inch. That girl's so tall. So that was really a special time to kick off the recruiting. So it sort of depends. The second part of your question escapes me.
Well, I mean, do you want them to play a lot of basketball in the summer? Do you want them to have some time where their bodies are away from that?
I think we give them some time in May. I'm a firm believer that skill development and strength is built on consistency. And so the people like Sydney Jordan who follows that book to a T in terms of her weightlifts and her skill work, look at her development as a player, or Leslie Robinson, or, you know, the kids that are more spiked are the kids that have spiked in their training. So as much as you're not in peak condition, you should be getting there now. We're mid-August, late August. But consistency, not shooting 1,000 shots in one day, but shooting 110 days is going to make you better. So I'm actually a believer in that more so than too much time off.
And then, of course, the new class coming to school this fall, you know, what do you tell them over the summer? And
got to keep them real close.
What are you allowed to tell them? Anything you want, right?
Anything. Yeah, I keep them real close. We need them now. We need them right away. And the strength and speed and commitment that they're going to, it's going to hit them like a ton of bricks if they're not ready. So I'm checking in constantly on their run times. I'm checking in constantly on their lifts. I'm checking in constantly on their level of mental preparation and their eagerness. And their so those freshmen are... they're almost coddled until they get here, and then they'll get some tough love, I'm sure. But I need them to – they're not just, like, showing up and saying, what now? This is should be now the fourth month of their preparation.
And so what do you do when they get here, like, immediately when they get here? What's the first type of thing that you try to do to welcome them into the group?
We get them right on the track for the run test, first day. First morning – first day we're allowed to do anything is the first day of classes, and that's
September
12th. And so at 7:30 a.m. we'll be running.
And what about – class. What about moving and all that kind of stuff? Are you involved
Hi.
Like social type of things? Or?
No. I think I'm one of those, again, I'm pretty old school maybe in some way, and that team chemistry comes from doing hard things together, not by, you know, taking a walk through campus together and all that. So, you know, September 1st is their move-in day as a staff. If we're all around, we will make sure that in the past, we've been able to kind of pick a time, like 3 o'clock, and meet at Dillon and all get to say hello. By now, we're so close to these people that it feels like I just want to see them. But no, and then I won't literally, probably unless they stop by because they want to, I won't see them until the first day of class. And I'm probably a little more old school like that.
So if you suppose the NCAA came to you and said, we want you to make the calendar for the summer for coaches. Mm-hmm. Would you change it a lot? Do you like the way it lays out?
It's interesting you ask. So I'm on the board of the WBCA. And so I was also on the recruiting ad hoc committee.
Because they've changed a lot of those rules.
They've changed a lot. So over the last 2 years, I was on this committee that was NCAA run that involved a ton of time, but it was really important work where we really broke down the recruiting calendar and looked at efficiencies and building relationships, but also trying to address some of the forthcoming challenges of transfers and people making the wrong choices and third parties and whatnot. Fascinating work. We settled the calendar we're on. I believe in it. For the first time ever, we put in 2 1-week shutdowns where there's no recruiting allowed for a full 7 days. We just finished one. One's in May, one's in August. And the one that just finished, I mean, I looked at my staff and I was like, I feel so behind. I haven't recruited in a week, to give you some nature of how much we recruit. And then I also just got named to the oversight committee via the NCAA, of which there's only me and the UCLA coach on that committee. And that will be really important. We're replacing Don Staley, who was at South Carolina, because now you have a voice at the national level about where our game is. And so I find that, you know, kind of to start full circle our conversation about politics or whatnot. I'm always interested in how things work and recognizing that you can either be a change agent or the change can knock you over. And I'm trying to be a part of the change agent.
And all of those things are different than the actual playing rules committee.
Yes.
Is there, obviously you're not part of that, but if you were going to, do you like the way the rules of women's basketball are now? Would you make any changes to it?
You know, for the pro game, I would.
What do you hear from men's coaches? Because I love the four quarter.
I do too. Love it. I love the
four
quarters.
Do you think the men would ever go to that?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think there are times where we want to try to stay aligned with what the men are doing to try to make our sports similar enough to be attractive to the general fan, but yet different enough to meet what our individual needs are. I think we feel very good about our four quarters. I think the fans feel good about it. It's been a great change. I think the shot clock, in the pro women's side, to the W, they call it, the WNBA, it's a 24-second shot clock, like the pro for the men's side, and that's just too quick. They're not taking great shots. Offenses are really simple, and so the shots, the field goal percentages are down. It's a very fast game, but I think you can play a fast game at 26, 28. The pro game I've gotten really into because of Blake.
As my next thing was going to bring up Blake Dietrich.
Yeah, I've been pretty.
You could tie the Blake Dietrich thing into.
Yeah,
that.
I mean, gosh, following her has been such a career highlight for me. I mean, the kid should write. We should have a movie made on Blake Dietrich. I mean, remember, she was a lacrosse recruit coming to Princeton, and really proud that she trusted me, and we just kind of went to work and got her better and better and better. And to make a pro team is impossible. She did it, and to stay on a pro team is impossible, and she did it. And she plays, and she's important to every game, and her coach loves her, and her coach was like, no great team is great without a Blake Dietrich. And that's a pretty Princeton thing. We have great kids. So I've watched a lot of the WNBA. I've watched a lot of Atlanta Dream games. So I've learned a lot more about it, having been so invested. Before I was a casual fan, and now I'm addicted.
Did you notice the rule changes in men's lacrosse? Shot clock.
The shot clock's going to be good. I know women's lacrosse is also looking to make some changes, which is so great. I think there are purists that look at the game and say, gosh, four quarters in basketball, no longer am I a fan of women's basketball. And it's like,
I like it.
Me too. The athletes are changing. The game is changing.
It makes it faster. The other thing it does
is less timeouts.
It's less timeouts. You reset the foul count.
Totally. Less free throws. Yes. People thought there'd be more situational play, and it's like, where are you standing on the 2-for-1 at the end of a quarter? I just want a good shot. So many people are like 2-for-1 because the rule books or because the scheme you could get 2-for-1. I wonder how many coaches really try hard for a 2-for-1 actually get both shots and both go in, right? The rule
changes.
That'd
be interesting to track, actually.
I'm fairly certain it would be far more who don't care about the 2-for-1, just care about good shots, are scoring at a higher percentage. But yeah, so I think the rule changes are fascinating. I feel like I more just adjust to those, but the policy about how our game can grow and develop and in terms of the fan experience and in terms of the recruiting is sort of more where I'm spending my time.
And that's been your summer. I mean,
that's been the summer.
It's
late August already. And there's always a sense of newness that I'm excited about for this particular group with 6 freshmen. It's a whole new, losing Leslie was one of our best leaders of all time, and adding 6 freshmen, new staff. It is an entirely new year. So give me 2 more weeks and I'll probably feel better about where we are. But I certainly love the talent we have. I couldn't be more thrilled genuinely and authentically for my staff. I'm really excited about them. But newness is coming and I've got to be ready to attack it.
Well, this has been our late summer podcast. First of all, happy birthday to your dad and to my
brother. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
We'll be back for season 2 of the Court Report once we get, we'll probably want to do one in September and then
start knowing my kids by then. Yeah, it'd be fine. I've gotten I was in Nantucket and people were saying it's something that when am I getting back to it? So I appreciate the support people are getting into it.
Well, we'll figure out the schedule, but we're definitely committing to doing it each week during the season and starting in the preseason. So we'll have a lot of time to talk with Courtney Banghart as the 2018-19 season approaches.
Getting old. Thanks, Jerry.
For Princeton Women's Basketball Head Coach Courtney Banghart, I'm Jerry Price. Thank you for listening to the Court Report, and thank you for your continued support of Princeton Women's Basketball.